Little Foxes by Michael Morpurgo, Chapter 11. With a good sleep and a meal inside them at last, they were in high spirits as they climbed down out of the hay barn that night. Billy waited until the worst of the rain had passed, and then with a fresh spring in his stride, he set off to cross the valley that night. "Got to cross the river tonight," he told the fox. The further they got to search, the less chance they got of finding us. But the fox needed no encouragement. He walked on ahead, the lead always at full stretch, pulling Billy along behind him. There was no moon now, so Billy could see little except the grey sliver of road in front of him. They left the road when it began to twist uphill and away from the river. Once the fields again, Billy let the fox off the lead. There were no alarms except for a sheep that coughed from behind a hedge. It was a human cough. A perfect imitation of Auntie May's smoker's cough, and it was enough to send them scurrying into a flooded ditch. And more than once, some great white bird wafted by over their heads. A barn owl, Billy imagined it to be at first, but then he remembered the barn owl in his wilderness flew more silently than this one, whose wings whistled gently as they beat the air. Billy thought it must be a bigger barn owl and thought no more about it. The fox glanced up at it and knew exactly what it was. They had not gone far that night when the rain began to fall again. A few sparse heavy drops at first, but as the wind got up, it lashed down and they were soaked to the skin within minutes. Billy thought of finding somewhere to shelter, but he was determined to cross the river that night. And anyway, he reasoned, he was already as wet as it was possible to be, so what was the point? No, they wouldn't, but they'd battle on through the rain until they reached the river. And so indeed they did, some hours later. But by this time, Billy was shivering with the cold and his legs were numb from the knees down and he was suffering frequent stomach cramps and he knew he could not go on much further. The rain had turned to hail now as Billy skirted the riverbank, looking desperately for a bridge across or for somewhere to hide up. The fox walked alongside him, nose to the ground, to avoid the stinging hailstones. He would stop only to shake the wet from his fur, and then he was trotting on again, turning to wait for Billy to catch him up. His companionship that dreadful night kept Billy from giving up. He was always there to talk to, and then, whenever they rested for a while under a tree or under the lee of a hedge, he would push his head under Billy's arm as if to comfort him. "Got to be a bridge soon, got to be," Billy said more for himself than for the fox. "Can't be far now." It was a hope rather than a promise, but because it was spoken to the only fellow creature he loved in the whole world, it was enough to spur him on, enough to drive him to his feet once more and out into the wild night. The rain eased at last, just before dawn, the thunderclouds disappearing under cover of the night, leaving the fields sodden and the trees still raining. Billy and the fox found themselves starting out across a broad sweep of flat water meadows that followed the winding course of the river, uninterrupted as far as the eye could see. And still there was no bridge and nowhere at all for them to hide out in the open water meadows. And even at its narrowest, the river was far too wide for them to swim across. And yet that was just what Billy was contemplating when the fox beside him froze, one paw lifted in the air, his ears pricked. Billy stopped. At first he could hear only the rush of the river and the croaking cry of a rising heron as it lifted out of the reeds nearby. And then through it all, unmistakably now, though distant, the sound of a strange, unearthly music. Suddenly the fox was no longer by his side. He was running over the field towards the music. And Billy called him back, but the fox ignored him. Reluctantly, Billy followed, whistling all the while for the fox to stop and come back. And even though he was weak with cold and fatigue, Billy had no inclination whatsoever to give himself up. And when he saw the dark silhouette of the barge moored at the bend of the river, his instinct was still to hide. The music was warming and welcoming, but it was not that that drew Billy on now towards the barge. It was the sight of his fox sitting down only a few paces from the barge, head on one side, listening to the music. The fox was showing himself quite openly to whoever was on the barge. So Billy thought there was little point in his hiding any more. As he walked slowly towards the barge, Billy noticed that the water around it was alive with birds, moorhens, mallards, herons, a fleet of Canada geese, and one large white swan. Every one of them was facing the music, listening intently to it, and in the fields on both sides of the river, the cows and the sheep stood quite still, gazing hypnotically at the barge, some of them legless in the low-lying mist. The dark hulk of the barge took on features as Billy came closer. It was painted from end to end with wreaths of flowers, and perched amongst them, almost hidden, Billy could pick out the shape of swans, dozens of them, wonderfully painted. And sitting on a deck chair by the wheelhouse was a man, dressed, Billy could see, in a collarless shirt, a tatty dark jacket, and a wide straw hat with several holes in it. He could not yet see the face, for it was bent forward under the shadow of the hat and was covered entirely by two large hands that seemed to massage the music out of the mouth organ. Only when the tune was finished did the man sit back in his chair and at last look up. "Christopher! Christopher!" said the man, pushing himself up out of the deck chair and coming towards Billy across the deck of the barge. "Is it really you?" "I'm Billy, Billy Bunch," said Billy, perplexed by the man's question. The man nodded slowly, tried to smile, but could not. There was in his eyes the faraway look of a solitary kind of man, and Billy decided he was quite old, not yet grandfather old, but old nonetheless. The sad, lined face under the straw hat gave him the appearance of a weary scarecrow that still tried to look the part, but had long ago lost the art of frightening the birds away. For there was nothing alarming about this dishevelled appearance, nothing wild in his eyes. When he did speak again, his voice was firmer and younger, Billy thought, than his looks. "Caught out in the storm, then, were you, old son?" the man asked. "Yes," said Billy. "Wet through, I shouldn't wonder." "Yes." "Hungry?" "Yes." "That your fox, is it?" "Yes." Thought so. "Better bring him on board, then. You've time to dry yourselves off before breakfast. Bacon and eggs it'll be. It's all there is, all I ever have. He'll have bacon and eggs, won't he?" "He likes eggs," said Billy, looking down at the gap of dark water between the barge and the bank. "How do I get on, anyway?" And as if to show him, the fox leapt nimbly across onto the barge. "Like that," said the man, and he reached out his hand, and Billy took it and jumped on board. Some way up the river, in sight of the barge, the lone swan sailed in amongst the reeds, waddled awkwardly up onto the bank, and began to preen herself, arching her neck and twisting backwards so she could dive her bill amongst the feathers under her folded wings.